When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We're back with more
Indeed.
Buffett stuff.
Buffett stuff.
By the way, he's got an annual meeting coming up. Mm-hmm. The first one maybe ever that they've done without Charlie Munger.
I know. Oh, it's going to be, it's just going to be hard for everybody.
You know, and we talked about the early part of this letter where Warren gave Charlie all the credit for making Berkshire the behemoth success that it is. And to a certain degree, it's really kind of true.
Charlie's
idea that you go for a wonderful business instead of just a cheap business really changed Warren's behavior. I don't know if you guys knew this, but the early letters from Warren, the ones in the late 50s, early 60s, were all about very active movement off of companies. He always liked a fairly focused portfolio on his mm-hmm. long positions, mm-hmm. but he would carry a merger acquisition portfolio that was 20, 30 stocks deep. And then he would have other kind of workout things going on. So he had a number of companies but his main focus was just getting stuff that was really cheap. And Charlie basically came along and said, look, those days are over. Cheap isn't going to be the same as it was in the past. And you're going to have to find companies as you grow in size that you don't want to move in and out of. You want to just keep them. And sort of the astonishing thing is that Warren has held on to companies like Coca-Cola, which just grow so slowly, and See's Candy growing so slowly. These companies are growing like slightly over the pace of inflation, you know?
He mentioned that in the letter. He mentioned Coca-Cola and American Express, I think, as his two particular ones that he's owned forever. Yeah.
Yep. Never sell. But a look at their portfolio would show that the size of those companies in the portfolio has shrunk over time as the size of the portfolio has grown. They haven't added stock to American Express and Coca-Cola for years, preferring to have companies which are more on sale, and in particular preferring Apple Computer, which he bought super cheap, and which I understand pretty deeply why he bought it. I was buying it as he was buying it, and man, it was an 11 cap company back in those days. This was really extraordinary that you could buy a company that good and it would produce an owner earnings of an 11% return on your purchase price. It was just like, what? So that is a, you know, that has just grown and grown in his portfolio as it's continued to grow itself. And he's continued to put capital in over time.
Yeah. But, and I think he clearly really, I think he and Charlie bumped up against each other with those two philosophies still quite often, because he constantly was giving Charlie credit for telling him no.
Exactly.
And then in this letter, so what, for anybody who's coming to this, we're talking about the 2023 Berkshire shareholder letter from Warren Buffett. In this letter, he particularly talks about how the market, thanks to the speed of communication and the amount of information we all have, is even more, he says, casino-like than it was when I was young. And the casino now resides in many homes and daily tempts the occupants, unquote. Which is exactly what we talk about so much. Like, it's on our phones, it's on our apps, it's on the TV. It's something that has become available to so many of us in a wonderful way. But for the people who, for whatever ridiculous reason, have not turned on this podcast, they are going with the casino behavior of buying whatever seems good and making a bet. And therefore you sell more quickly. And that's what he's saying, is that there's just so much opportunity to be active as a buyer and seller. And that makes the market just go nuts.
And it's fascinating that a lot of the volatility is going to come because of one of the things that Warren has been more or less recommending people do for a lot of years, which is to buy the index. Now, back when he started recommending
it, that's a great
point.
Yeah,
the index stocks were had limited amount of liquidity. You know, there weren't a lot of people looking at the index per se. Trading was, or investing was done predominantly through mutual funds that were actively managed, and that has dramatically shifted. So much so that mutual fund companies that house mutual funds and have a lot of mutual funds under them, are actively promoting people who would be mutual fund managers to not be a mutual fund manager. They want you to be an ETF manager because that's what's selling out there in the market. So it's really interesting. It's the number of ETFs is going up as almost dollar for dollar with the number of mutual funds that are coming down. So people are saying, look, I would rather not, like the whole Vanguard concept of a very, very small fee, which without active management has now permeated the industry to a point where people want active management via your selection of the kind of index that you're going to do, sort of active management because you're picking stuff. And create an index. They would rather have a kind of passivity with low fees. So it's amazing. I mean, people come and talk to us about, you know, wanting to put out our product on their platform, and we don't do that. We're very closely held. And
your product? But, what does that mean?
Well, like our fund, right? And so what happens is, I mean, basically they're coming back and going, well, can you do an ETF? That's a kind of a rule one ETF. And we're like, no, we don't know how to do that. But that's what sells. And they'll go raise a ton of money. And so it is really interesting. Wall Street, as Warren says, would like customers to make money. But what they really like is feverish activity because they can make
what they like are
$50 billion a year in
our fees.
You know,
they like fees.
And the fees. Yep.
Yeah. Because they get... So, much like real estate brokers, you know, they get paid upon the transaction, not upon whether that investment turns out to be good or not. So it's just a different business model than what they talk about.
Oh, such
and
a
I
different
think,
model than what they talk about. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know. But I think you're right, though, that like in this section, so I'm on page 7. Our not so secret weapon, where he talks about this casino-like behavior. Typically, he would then say, I recommend to my family members that they put any money that's not in Berkshire in an index. And he doesn't say that in this one. You're totally right.
Well, one of the problems with everybody following Warren's advice is that when everybody follows Warren's advice, there's no, to take it to the extreme, there's no one in the market doing active pricing. In other words, everything is simply pricing according to the flow of money.
Yeah.
So if the money flows into the SPX index, then the people who are running the index fund, SPY, for example, will have to buy all of the S&P 500 stocks pro rata to the money that came in. And if money just keeps coming in, they just have to keep buying. And if the stock prices go up on the S&P 500 index, then people are going to want to put their money in there. And the more they want to put their money in there, the more they buy, which drives it up. Mm-hmm. And what they have now is, I don't know. It's not a scheme because it's unintentional. But the end result is if you have a tremendous percentage of the amount of money in the market just in indexes, if for any reason they start to come down, then that automatic process starts to work against the market. And this is the volatility. And so it comes down really fast.
It creates big swings. Really big swings. Really fast. Fast big swings.
Super fast. And of course, super fast is really fun when it's going up. But it's really scary for people. I'm not going to say terrifying, but it's gut-wrenching for people who are investing their retirement out there and are close to retirement. Of course, the baby boomers fit this perfectly. Mm-hmm. And they would be very, very quick to dump the market if there's a major downturn. They're going to be extremely quick to dump the market, particularly with bonds at 5% or, you know, a combination of corporate bonds and U.S. Treasuries going for 7% maybe. That is, or annuities out there at 8%, 9%. Those are going to be extremely attractive to baby boomers compared to the market. So I think what we can look at here is that this market is, and Buffett more or less says this, it is going to downturn. We just don't know when. And when it does, it's going to be more volatile than we've seen before. And that impact is going to put things on sale. And that points to Buffett's not so secret weapon, which they have giant piles of cash ready to go as a cushion.
Yeah. So he says his solution to this problem is that they have a huge amount of cushion that will, he says, I believe Berkshire can handle financial disasters of a magnitude beyond any heretofore experienced.
Yeah, pay attention to that sentence.
Holy crap. I believe Berkshire can handle financial disasters of a magnitude beyond any heretofore experienced. This ability is one we will not relinquish.
Now, let me pop on this for a second, because what that means is that Berkshire is foregoing returns by holding money. You see what I'm saying? In other words, are now able to handle a financial disaster larger than anything we've ever experienced, it's because they kind of are looking for one.
Or they're just, I mean, as he reiterates consistently, he knows that many people have their retirements in Berkshire stock, and he takes that very seriously, and he genuinely is trying to make the company disaster proof. I don't know if that means, of course, he's always looking for an opportunity, right? But
he's really laying some stuff in there that you just read between the lines, and it's
you
like,
think?
Oh yeah, because look at the next few lines. He's basically saying, go to 2008 and 9, last time we had the market drop 50%. Mm-hmm. And Berkshire, he says, in a very minor way, we helped extinguish the financial fire rather than being among the companies that ignite the conflagration.
He's absolutely correct. Berkshire was an asset to the country in that situation. They were there when CEOs started calling with money, with cash.
With money. Yeah. Absolutely. And you can't be there with money if you're taking current returns.
True.
In other words, you're going to sacrifice current returns in order to be able to handle a financial disaster.
Exactly.
Buffett currently has, last check was right around $160 billion available. $160 billion. It's pushing up toward half of all of the assets of Berkshire. The total value of Berkshire assets is roughly a $400 billion, something like that. Hmm. And holy Christmas, he's got almost half of it in cash.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Well, I read this as, is this advice? Is this some, like, personally, for a family, for me, like, should I be doing this? And, like, that's how I read it. Like, oh, this is something each of us can be doing personally. Like, is this something I really should take some stock and take some stock of like our ability to handle financial disasters of a magnitude beyond any heretofore experienced.
Man,
as a standard, that's an extreme standard, and it's one that foregoes returns, as you just said.
Absolutely. So he goes, and here's a line that we shouldn't forget. We do not predict the time of an economic paralysis, but we were always prepared for one. Meaning we're not predicting one now, but we are completely prepared for one. Mm. And that is something, he's talking about it in terms of Berkshire's being built to last. But if you look back at a 60-year history, Buffett has been like, it's almost been like he's had a crystal ball for when to be heavily in cash. It's really extraordinary.
He kind of seems to me like he's just always heavily in cash.
Oh man, he stacks it up. I don't know that. Okay, fair enough. His crystal ball might be in hindsight a little bit, like his percentage of cash from 2000 when we had a crash, 2000-2001, pretty major crash, market down 40-50%, and it was in 2003 that he really started stacking up cash, and then he invested it aggressively. Same thing in 2000. 10, 11, 12, 13. He was basically stacking cash.
Maybe so it wasn't sort of stacking as much as simply not having the opportunities in those years. And therefore, the result of that is stacking.
Well, I think if you look at it, the opportunities were there while he was building cash. And then he came in, which is to say that he's very careful and wants the bottom. And the same thing happened in the 2020 drop. And it happened to us. I mean, we were heavily in cash at the first of the year with the signals that we use. And you know, we don't have a crystal ball. But when it crashed, we got in about half of the cash. We got into the market thinking that it's still got a long way to go.
Yeah. We
didn't know they were going to put trillions of dollars of cash in everybody's hands, which was great. I'm glad they did. But we were still sitting there without having done any investing. And Buffett sort of was famously criticized for not taking action there. He didn't buy anything. And it was basically, his view was, you know, what he said was, we're just not nimble, you know, like, but what I think is very likely he was seeing what everybody else was seeing. And that is, this is a financial catastrophe and is going to see the stock market just get crushed. And it didn't happen because of Trump being very aggressive and the Federal Reserve being very aggressive. So, yeah, I mean, right now he's sitting with more cash than he's ever had in history, putting things in the letter that are very important for us to understand. And I think what you said, which is we should pay attention and do what he's doing, is probably really good advice.
I think it's really good to think it over, you know, how prepared each of us is for that kind of catastrophic situation. But as far as being prepared, I mean, this is something we go back and forth on literally like every quarter. I gotta say, we have a podcast on this every time because it's just like, do you prepare for a crash or do you invest when there's an opportunity?
Yes.
And those things are diametrically opposed.
No, they're a yes. They're a yes. You do both of those.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They're opposed.
But they're not diametrically opposed.
They have to be. If you put money, you could put 100% of your money in a great opportunity, right? So that it means you have no cash. The end. And so Buffett constantly having so much cash is, I think, probably a function of both things. He's preparing, as he says, but he's always seems to be, I mean, since I've been around in this investing world, every letter has been, the sky is about to fall, make sure you're ready with your wheelbarrow to go catch the raining gold.
This is not the history of Buffett or Berkshire for the long history. You've been in doing this in one of the weirdest one of the weirdest government intervention markets
totally.
In my whole career, and certainly in Buffett's whole career.
Absolutely.
None of us have ever seen anything like this.
Hands up, agree. Yes, 100%.
Right?
Yes.
Where
not,
the government
not
is,
the same
we've
as
talked
before.
About this before, where the government is just pouring money into the hands of whoever. But what happens is that it ultimately ends up in assets that are real, right? When it gets spent on, you know, pickup trucks, it ends up in the hands, ultimately, of people who are already rich. And so the rich got richer and richer and richer. And as they get richer and richer, they don't have any place to put their money, so they just keep buying stocks. and keep buying real estate, driving both of these things through the moon. Mm-hmm. And we have never seen anything like this. It's the level of growth in the stock market is, and the time period that it's been going on is just simply unprecedented. And we finally get a recession from COVID and it lasts like 10 minutes before they print trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
It is really
insane. It's happening now, right?
It's like insane. They have driven our debt over these past years since you've been doing this. They've driven our debt up by trillions and trillions of dollars while printing trillions and trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And that combination of increased debt is putting America and the U.S. dollar in a certain amount of jeopardy. It would be in a tremendous amount of jeopardy if it wasn't for the fact that the rest of the world is crazier than we are. So we've got these fiat currencies that are just being printed everywhere, and nobody knows how it's going to end.
Yeah. But
what it's certainly been doing is driving the stock market to really ridiculous heights. And one of the things we've talked about in the podcast, not to hog this thing, but one of the things we've talked about in the podcast is the Wilshire GDP ratio, mm-hmm. which currently is like twice as high as when Buffett was saying that it's, you know, an indication that the market is on fire and you're
that was when we out. First that was when you first started teaching me, and you were that was yeah. one of the first things you explained to me was how yeah. insanely high this ratio was. So for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, if you just put into your search engine what would you put in, like St. Louis Reserve,
I just put in Wilshire ratio, Fred, F-R-E-D, Fred, sure. Wilshire GDP ratio.
Yeah, and it's a chart that will come up, and it's the ratio of pretty much all the stocks in the market compared to the GDP of the U.S. So, well, no.
So I want to kind of go back to the letter here, unless you got more points on that other stuff.
No, I thought you were going somewhere with that, the Wilshire ratio being crazy.
No, just that it's crazy. And
it's crazy.
To put a fine point
okay,
on
well,
it.
Okay, well, I have a suggestion. A middle ground.
Mm.
An investment that is like cash.
Mm.
Berkshire.
You want to buy Berkshire.
So that's a middle, right? You can put your money in a company that is cash generating, and therefore it's invested, and yet invested in a company that, according to Buffett, is built to last.
Well, yes, you could do that. The problem is it probably violates one big Buffett rule.
Price.
Which, if you're trying to be an investor as opposed to just somebody who speculates, puts money in the market, don't know what things are worth. If you don't know what things are worth, buying Berkshire is not a bad idea at all. Even today, you're getting a lot of company for the money, certainly. But it's not what Buffett would consider to be on sale.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one. And number two, good luck understanding it. It's a giant company. It's one of the biggest companies in the world with probably 100 different businesses that are diverse. And it is... You know, really, you just have to go, well, Warren Buffett's running it. And that's not investing, in
right.
my view. So you could do
but
that.
But it is kind of like
suggestion.
An index, I think. Or maybe you don't know all the businesses in it, but you're essentially investing in the market with an index. And this is like, you don't, yeah. I'm not saying like you shouldn't know all the businesses, but if, let's say you're somebody who's not going to read those things. Okay, you don't know every single business Berkshire owns and operates, but you're kind of investing in Buffett and Buffett's team. Not kind yeah. of, you're literally doing that.
Yeah, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And there are worse things to do.
Yeah.
And I think probably if you're really in it for the long term and you're not going to do a lot of your own personal work, that is not a bad idea for the simple reason that Buffett does have $160 billion sitting in cash. If this market crashes, he's going to go on a buying spree and pick up a ton of companies, many of which he already owns. He's going to be buying more of Coca-Cola, more of American Express, more of Apple, certainly. But a buying spree nonetheless. And that means that the following years, probably the following decade, you'll see Berkshire long after Buffett's gone, you'll see Berkshire's value continue to grow as the market recovers. So not a bad thought, Danielle.
I've had many people say to me, well, I've just decided I'm going to buy Berkshire after Buffett passes away because the stock price is going to drop. The number of people who have that as their plan tells me that the stock price is either not going to drop that much or it's going to rise, because so many people are like, this is going to be the time. Like, everyone's going to be worried about it.
You might be totally right. Honestly, I don't know. I would buy Berkshire at a price, right? At a price. We always look at Berkshire in terms of its book value per share. And it's
and the
very,
reason
very
that we
rare.
Do that is that that's how Buffett said is the best way to evaluate.
That's when
Berkshire.
He's buying it, certainly. He's been buying it more lately anyway. But we'd certainly look at it and buy it at the low ratio of book value to price. So if I were you and I wanted to buy this thing cheap, what I would do is I would look at a chart of the price of Berkshire per share, and I would chart against that the book value every year. You can get that out of the 10K or the 10Ks, or you can get it from almost any
that chart compiler. Is out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just compare price to book value, and you'll see that there's a couple of times every 20 years or so where this thing goes on down to that low price to book value ratio. I think you can buy it with pretty good confidence at that level.
It's usually, at least in my short experience, it's usually when people start writing articles about, has Buffett lost his touch? ? Or is Buffett's style of investing no longer applicable in this market? ?
Right on.
And then, like, usually something happens and everyone starts going, what does Buffett say about it?
Right on.
Well, I wanted to note that at the end of the letter, he goes back to Bertie, because we started talking about Bertie, his sister, at the beginning. And at the end of the letter, he goes back to her and says, so what did Bertie do as far as her investing? And he calls her one of the country's great investors. He says she was active financially for 20 years and actively traded stocks. Her potential remained unnoticed. I thought that was so interesting, because never has he talked about his sister being an investor. Never have I heard of his sister being an investor. Like, that's so wild that she probably just, you know, your brother's the most famous stock investor in the world. You probably don't talk about your own investing that much.
But let me explain why he's saying
it's
that.
It's a sweet call out, right?
It's a sweet call out, and he's saying it because she did the thing that's hard, which makes her one of the great investors. And the thing that's hard is to just sit there and do nothing, which she did.
And
nothing,
to my point,
for 43 years.
So then he says she stopped actively trading and bought a mutual fund and Berkshire and made no new trades for the next 43 years and became very rich.
And
because she owned Berkshire.
The longer I do this, and I've been doing this for 40 years, the more the wisdom of that statement comes through. If you apply it to rule one investing, she just applied it to the whole market in Berkshire. Okay, fair enough. But if you apply it to rule one investing, where you're really going after a doubling every 3 years, that's a target that we like to go after. Very difficult to achieve, but it puts you in the right frame of mind for looking for a small number, those rare companies that are really fabulous that go on sale, that are compounders and will compound your money at high rates of return independently of you doing anything for many, many years. And it's just a matter of holding on to them through the ups and downs of the market. You just don't bother to sell your farm, or you don't bother to sell your house. That's essentially the same mind frame you've got to be in with these great compounders. I mean, man, one of my biggest mistakes over and over again throughout my investing career, and probably the reason that I'm just a millionaire instead of a billionaire, honestly, is the failure to hold on to really great companies that I bought cheap. Because when I make a lot of money on them, then I want to collect it.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking
that
they've arrived
the part
at their
that's
upper
difficult.
End.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do.
You want to realize the gains because...
A classic example, of course, is getting Chipotle Mexican Grill at $250 and selling it for $500. Yeah. And it's currently at $3,000. And the guy that did better than me on this by far was Bill Ackman, who bought in at $400 and still is holding it. It's now the biggest position in his portfolio.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thinking that's really difficult. And that's why he's saying that Bertie is one of the best investors in the world, because that is hard to do. And yeah. I haven't been good at it. I'm trying to get better.
Yeah. I mean, I did the same independently of you. I did the same thing and sold Chipotle.
Yep.
But I consider it to be a great move because it was a really good lesson.
Oh, there you go. That's a good way
to
look
at it. And I'm hoping that I will not repeat that one.
So take the lesson from the letter and from my mistakes and from Danielle's, that if you apply Rule 1 investing principles, you find great companies, then you just keep them. You just put them away. Pay attention to how they're doing in general, but that's it. And I think that you cannot help but get very, very wealthy if you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. What a great ending there, Dad. Sweet. let's get back to talking about the weather next time, because I would like to wrap that up. Yeah.
The weather matrix. Let's go talk
and the
about
weather.
It.
Okay.
Yeah, for
cool.
sure.
All right.
Until then.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Time to go play. See ya. Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.